Welcome to the PDPW podcast, brought to you by Professional Dairy Producers, dairy's professional development organization.
Good morning. This is Bruce Vincent. I'm a third generation logger from Libby, Montana. And this morning I'd like to talk with you about building bridges. I've spent the majority of my adult life talking about the need to be an advocate for our rural natural resource-based cultures. Largely, those cultures have been built by farmers, ranchers, miners, loggers, or fishermen. And those of us who live in rural communities that have these industries as mainstays often think that the rest of American society, who are heavily urbanized and three or four generations from the farm, just don't like us. We get that impression because what seems like a constant attack against what we do, whether it's raising and milking cows, managing the forest, mining for minerals, or fishing for America's dinner table, the diatribes seem endless and the jabs taken at our industries by extreme groups or Hollywood are constant and hurtful. We've seen or heard the slights thrown our way for a lifetime. Knuckle-dragging loggers want to cut all the trees down. Ranchers want to destroy the rangeland and abuse their cattle. Miners want to make rivers run yellow and kill all the fish. Dairymen are killing the planet with cow farts. Every Disney movie for decades has started with harmony and balance, butterflies flitting in a beautiful green field, wolves raising orphaned rabbits in a sea of old-growth timber, until the 20-minute mark when the evil, earth-destroying, harmony-destroying villains show up. Those villains are often portrayed as being from the cultures we live in and love, people who work the earth and care for the environment in order to provide food, clothing, and shelter for humanity, and provide a living and a way of life for our families and communities. But in the storylines, the evil logger, miner, fisherman, rancher, dairyman, they show up and must be defeated to protect the earth. We've watched these movies with our kids for decades and felt the sting of the side slap at our professions, our cultures, and our identities. Years of attacks in the media and being the bad guys in movies pumped out of Hollywood can make us feel like America just doesn't like us. In fact, it was my distaste about Americans being taught these incorrect things about us that drove me to begin speaking up and becoming an advocate for my culture. We are environmentalists and conservationists and do what we do because we love nature and see man as part of nature. We're stewards of God's creation, not separate from it. But is it true that Americans don't like us? I think I learned the answer to that question, and it surprised me. I learned about what the rest of society feels about us by telling my story of who I am and what I do in the forest. If you've heard me on my trail of jawjacking, you've heard me encourage each of us to take a bit of our business time out of our business life to be advocates. That means taking an hour a week out of our business to present ourselves to the public we serve and use that time to tell our story. The time for advocacy should not be taken from family time or time that we dedicate to our faith, but just should be part of doing business. Well, several years ago, I decided to use my 1 hour a week to go to a school in a little timber town a few hundred miles from my hometown. It was Earth Day, and I wanted to meet the students and the teachers and tell them my family story. I was a bit worried about going in, but that trip changed my life and ultimately changed how I think about the relationship we have and can have with society as a whole. After spending my hour in a rural 1,000-person logging town's middle school classroom talking about my life and work as a logger, I learned that the kids in that timber town were just as disconnected from the world of forestry as the kids in Chicago, unless they too had a family member directly involved in forest management. Kids in our small towns get 200 channels streamed into their living room on their TV, and they too use books in their classroom that are part of a national curricula. But the class visit was awesome. The kids had really great questions about a day in the life of a logger and shared with me their enthusiasm about taking care of nature. As I was leaving the class, the teacher indicated that my visit was really timely because the next day the class would be getting to be introduced to and adopting and naming a wolf. The wolf was going to be brought in by a gal from the Sierra Club, and I knew the person bringing the wolf to school, and I knew she was not just bringing nature, but political dogma into the school. And after the kids named the wolf, she was going to paint loggers and farmers and ranchers as bad for the wolf. For the kids, the emotionally charged views that corresponded to what they learned from Disney would trump any kind of science-based reality that I had shared. So I had 200 miles of windshield time to get home, and I pondered what I call charismatic megafauna. When the conflict industry wants to beat up on our industries, they humanize nature and vilify humans. Think of Flipper the dolphin, Willie the whale, warm and fuzzy spotted owls. I pondered what we had to connect with kids and society. And the only charismatic megafauna I could come up with that we have to help us connect with the public is us. So when I got home, I called the teacher up, told her I thought it was cool that the kids were adopting wolves, but asked if she would consider having the kids adopt a logger. I told her I already have a name and everything, don't have to do that part. And she laughed and said, well, that'd be cool. So along with Alfred the wolf, I was adopted by the students. We communicated for the next year, and on the next Earth Day, I went back into the class and talked with the kids. That day was such a hit, the teachers asked if they could adopt other people who work in the environment and provide stuff for our store shelves, like farmers and ranchers and miners and fishermen and dairy farmers. And a unique program called Provider Pals was launched. Its mission was to take the first step of introducing not our industries, but our rural resource-providing cultures in order to build bridges of understanding and respect between teachers, who are consumers, and kids, who would someday be consumers, and introduce them to the producers of the stuff that they need for survival, food, clothing, shelter. And the program that started in that little logging town eventually took off across the country. We had schools in tons of other small towns and some big places like New York, L.A., Detroit, Minneapolis, Little Rock, Fort Lauderdale, Louisville. Kids all over the place started adopting people like you and me to meet and greet. We had a deep sea fisherman, turkey growers, pork producers, corn and soy and wheat producers, and dairy farmers like Minnesota's Dairy Princess and copper miners, gold miners, old oil field workers, sea urchin divers, and a slew of other folks that work in the environment. Some were field workers, some were office workers, some were accountants, some worked with tools, some worked with computers. But what I learned in that process was that not only did America not hate us, they were excited to get the chance to meet us. We are so disconnected from the ever more urban population that we're somewhat like a Disney character to them. Their hunger to get a glimpse of who we are and maybe meet us and find out what we do is real. And that's why TV shows like The Deadliest Catch or Axeman have become primetime television hits. These students and their teachers wanted to meet us and didn't have questions like parts per million or basal area per acre, but really tough questions like, what time do you get up? Do you name your cows? How far is it to the grocery store from your house? Do you have television or the internet? How big is your truck? Do you have any scars I can look at? Have you ever been chased by a bear? And importantly, some of the kids wanted to know if they might be able to find a career doing our job. What I learned is that the main body of society doesn't dislike us. They don't know us. And if we create the opportunity, they want to get to know us and ultimately learn about what we do. The learning is not one-sided either. I learned that we need to find out about those who aren't part of our industries and rural cultures and find out what they're thinking, why they're thinking the way they do, and what their worlds are like. These folks are just people, and they reach conclusions about the natural world from the only interface they have with it, and that's sometimes a small park in their city or the Disney or National Geographic channels. And frankly, short of television or vacations, we are just as disconnected from their urban life realities as they are from our rural realities. The classic example is when we went to our first school in New York City. It was the Center School on West 83rd Street in Manhattan. The school had adopted a cadre of rural resource providers, and on Earth Day, we all went to the school in the heart of Manhattan Island to meet the kids who'd adopted us. And after showing scrapbooks and answering questions about our lives, the providers did little projects with the kids, like bread in a bag from Ag in the Classroom. The kids roped plastic dummy heads with the rancher, panned for gold with the miner, cut tree cookies with the logger. These activities were held in the outside area. We have playgrounds in our rural areas, but their outside area where they had their playground is not the same as our rural schools. Their area was a rooftop above the eighth floor of the school, and it was surrounded by skyscrapers. When the class bell rang, 100 kids would climb out the school windows and onto the roof and play and commune with us. And after the activities, the kids would pose for pictures with their adopted provider and get their autographs. Yeah, the kids and teachers wanted their autographs. And when class was over, they'd climb back into their classrooms, and another 100 kids would climb out to join us. That was their out-of-doors reality, and it's important for us to see that. It helped us understand their worldview. These interactions were nothing short of transformative for the kids, the teachers, and for us, their providers. In fact, after one of the visits to that New York school, I got a panic call from the logger who'd been there. He was on his way back to Montana, and I was on my way to a school in Los Angeles, and he called me to tell me that he had left the chainsaw on the roof. And I told him, well, that sucks. And he said, yeah, it's probably already been hawked at a pawn shop. Like, there's a market for chainsaws on Manhattan Island. But I told him I thought it was probably still there. I get Mike Polson, a wheat farmer from Washington State, that was still there. I said, I'm sure he'll pick it up. He's still in the city. So I called Mike. He said he was only 20 blocks from the school, and he'd get it. Later that evening, I heard from Mike, and he said he'd picked the chainsaw up. But he also said, you've never lived until you've tried to hail a cab in New York City with a chainsaw. Oh, taxi! Said he had to walk the entire way. We live in different worlds. And the program proved to me how deep society's desire to connect with us is. And it can be life-changing for those that are involved. Now, there was a rancher from Wyoming involved in the program. His name was Jason Williams. And Jason was a good-looking young cowboy. And during the school year, he kept a blog on what it's like being a rancher in Wyoming in the winter, in the spring, in the summer, in the fall. And with his cowboy hat and big belt buckle and good looks, the tall, lanky guy was a hit with all the schools. In fact, the teachers would have a fight over him each fall when it came time to adopt somebody. A few years into the program, he was adopted by a school in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The prior year, he'd married Angie, a young ranch girl from Wyoming, and they were expecting their first child when the visit to the classroom was to take place. She was too pregnant to go with him. But the kids, who had communicated with Jason during the year, knew about the impending birth, and they were excited to meet him, and they had a surprise. There were three middle schools that got together during the year, and 1,500 kids and teachers held a surprise outside assembly for Jason when he showed up. They'd collected pennies all year, and with the help of their teachers, they'd purchased for that cowboy and his wife everything imaginable for a baby. And when he saw what they had done, he literally went to his knees. Importantly, as the kids who adopted providers from all over the country went through the rest of their learning and on to college, many of the providers stayed in touch with them, and they became a source of information for papers the students worked on in college classes, and the classes were as varied as environmental sciences and sociology. The Provider Pal program isn't managed on a national basis anymore. It's too expensive to fly resource providers around the country. But remember, the program didn't start in a city. It started with a logger visiting a classroom in a little timber town, a little logging town with a population of 1,000. The need is still there, and I strongly encourage you to consider using some of your time to visit your local school and introduce yourself and offer a tour of your place. When you do that, remember, industry is secondary to the great need to make human, cultural connections. What the people want to know is, who are you? Can I relate to you? Can I trust you to do the right thing for the environment and animals? And for some, they want to know, is there a career opportunity for me in your culture? What we do becomes secondary. Who we are is what opens the door to building bridges of understanding with the public. This reality of the desire to connect isn't just felt with teachers and kids in school. Your peers, adults in your own town's businesses or civic groups or church groups, they're also interested in who you are, but they don't know how to build a bridge to us. That job is on us. If you do go into a local group for their lunch meeting, and I encourage you to do that, or invite them to your dairy, if you enter in the engagement with an open mind and open ears to hear what they're asking and what they're thinking, I think you'll learn the same lesson I did. If we build the bridge, they will meet us, greet us, question us, and mutual ties of understanding and respect that bind us together can be built. Each of us builds a bridge within our communities to those who don't know us but would like to get to know us. Our culture will have ambassadors from outside of our ranks that will assist us in keeping our rural cultures alive and strong. The American society doesn't dislike us. They just don't know us, and they have a deep-seated desire to meet and talk, but we have to take the first step. They don't know how to approach us, so we need to approach them by taking a bit of time, introducing ourselves, and building a bridge of cultural understanding and respect. This logger from Montana hopes you have a great and blessed week doing this Lord's work of managing and protecting the environment while providing for humanity and building bridges to those that you serve. God bless.
Our thanks to Bruce Vincent for today's message. Bruce, a third-generation logger from Libby, Montana, and co-owner of the community outreach firm Environomics. Learn more about Bruce at brucevincentspeaking.com. And for archive PDP podcasts, visit pdpw.org. Until next time, have a great week.